This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a business seminar held on September 16, 2025 in East Earl, Pennsylvania.
Well, thank you, Ivan, and I want to say I'm very glad to be here. I do want to give a correction to Ivan, something Ivan said, and he only said it because I told him to say it. But it's actually 1,350 miles home from here. It's not 1530, a little transposition there. So it's still a long ways home. I come from South Central Kansas, grew up in Northwest Kansas, and it's a long, long ways away. But I'm very happy to be here in the Keystone State, and it's a beautiful state. I never dreamed that I would have as deep a ties in Pennsylvania as I do, but our oldest daughter married back in 96, and she married a Pennsylvania boy. And so she is here now in Berks County to the north, and he too, and we love him as a son, and they have four children. And so just as soon as we can get away here tomorrow evening, you can just imagine where we're headed. So we're always glad for an opportunity to come to Pennsylvania. I want to say a couple things about the session that we've already had, Dave's session. First of all, I would just say this. Well, I would say that Dave is a tough act to follow, but it's actually not an act. And 15 years ago, I didn't know Dave, but I've got to know him very well and appreciate him. And this is not an act, what we saw here this morning. He's sharing from his heart as he always does. Another thing I would like to say about it was we live out there in Kansas, and you learned in Dave's session that Kansas is the place to go if you've got a really deep, deep burden of heart. I think we heard that story, and so send them to Kansas. And so I would just say this, whether you have a burden of heart or whether you don't, we would be glad to see you there, but I do want to give you this caveat. In the zip code where I live, 67134, counting the little town of Sawyer and all the outlying mileage around, and I live 3 miles outside in the country, our entire zip code has 400 residents. And today here, I think I heard earlier that there are 600 people here. So I just want to say you're welcome, and we would like for you to come. But try to stage it a little bit. Don't all come at once. I would like to follow a little bit more on the introduction as well and just share a little bit about my life, not because we want to come here and talk about ourselves, but because it's fair to you to know who we are as we talk about a topic of business planning. And we believe in the topic of business planning. We believe in the importance of planning intentionally in business, and we're going to talk about why we think that's important this morning. But I would like to share just a little bit about my life, and it's already been shared, but I would just like to say a little bit more about it, what was already said in the introduction. But I would divide my life at this point in time into kind of four seasons of life for me, and I'm going to touch on each one of them again because it provides a backdrop even for this subject of planning. The first one is I was a farm boy. I grew up on a farm in Northwest Kansas, and I thought at the time that it was kind of a big farm for us, and we managed about 1,000 acres of family land. And first of all, I want to say that isn't Lancaster County, Pennsylvania out there, so don't try to relate acreage. But we managed about 1,000 acres, and I just dreamed of growing up and being a farmer like my dad. And my dad farmed with my uncle, so there's multiple families involved and so forth, and I thought I just wanted to be a farmer, and I'd be set, and I'd be happy, and so forth. And in the early 1980s, and I realize that there might not be a lot of relevance here this morning, but in the early 1980s, especially out in the High Plains, there was a severe financial crisis in farm country. And to make a long story short, my family got caught in the middle of that crisis, and it kind of brought our farming operation to a halt, and it got changed, and my uncle ended up leaving, and I ended up kind of leaving too, and it seemed like my dream about being a farmer with my dad was kind of dashed. And so at that point in my life, 18 years old, I got out of high school, and I developed somewhat of a dream, if you will. And among our people, going to college was allowed but not encouraged. Maybe not even entirely accepted, but it was allowed. And I ended up going to college, and I got a degree in ag economics, and I wanted to get in a place of helping farm families avoid what we had just gone through in financial crisis. And I ended up getting a job, and he mentioned it in the introduction. I got a job in an ag-oriented CPA firm, a very large one. And so I worked in a professional work world, a secular setting, and in a CPA firm, financial services and so forth. And I worked there a number of years, 12 years maybe, and I'll just say, and at that point in my life, I knew nothing about Anabaptist Financial. In fact, I'm going to go a little further and say I didn't even hardly know any Mennonites or Amish people. We didn't grow up around Mennonites and Amish out where I live, and so that's just the way it was. But I started to feel more and more as every year went by, I started to feel like I don't fit here. I'm a square peg in a round hole in this professional work world. And I never imagined scenes and settings like this where Anabaptist people, like-minded people, not all identical but with similar purpose, would come together to learn about business in a setting like this. And I've said before, when I first came to one of these business seminars after being in that secular work world, I thought, this is too good to be true. And so I felt like I didn't fit in it anymore. And so when I was 45 years old, my wife and I fulfilled a dream really of ours to, in a sense, to recreate the family farm experience without the debt and without the capital investment, but to create that experience of working together as a family. And so we started a family business, very, very small, in that little town of Sawyer, Kansas, about 100 right there in the town of Sawyer. But we've got a highway running through it, and we started a little family business there called Family Food Store. And we operated it for 12 years. Remember, we wanted to recreate the family farm experience. And over those 12 years, something happened. And what happened is our children grew up. And as Ivan shared, we have 5 daughters and 1 son. And we loved having this family food store for our daughters, especially our 4 older daughters. But in the process of time, they grew up and got married and moved away. One of them, of course, up here to Berks County. And we lost our workforce, and it started to change our business. And we went through a process of making a decision that we were either going to sell it to someone else or we were going to close it. And so last October, almost a year ago now, on October the 19th, I can still remember the day, and I can even remember the feeling when I turned the lock and we closed our store for the last time, and we folded it up, if you will, and closed it down. And we did so wistfully, and we did so even a little bit tearfully, but we also did it intentionally, and we did it peacefully. And I would say the answer to that is simply because we did what we planned to do. We thought about it in advance. We communicated with our customers and our community 6 months in advance. We failed to secure a sale, but we successfully concluded our small family business after 12 years of being in business. And we're not here today to talk about concluding businesses necessarily, but we had a plan when we started our business, and we had a plan when we closed it. I want to tell you a story. We went to a business seminar like this in another state, another area, and we shared some of the thoughts that we're going to share with you today about business planning and about why we think it's important. And we talked about our little store, and we talked about how we started it, and we had a business plan to guide that startup. And we talked about how we closed it, and we had a business plan that guided how we were going to bring it to a conclusion. 12 years to the day on our 12-year anniversary, exactly as we planned it. And just because I'm a man and because I'm human, I just have to admit we have our insecurities and we have our wonderments. And I went to a session like that, and even here today, I think, you know, I had a tiny little business, family food store. It's probably smaller than maybe every business here in the room. It was successful for what it was. It did exactly what we wanted it to do, but it was little. It was little, and I know your businesses are big and complex, and many of them are multi-generational, and I went to this other seminar, and I was feeling some of those insecurities, but we shared our thoughts. We talked on business planning, and we shared our story about Family Food Store, about beginning a business and then winding it down after 12 short, sweet years. And there was a man came up to me at lunch break. We spoke in the morning there as well, and we were thankful so that we could relax and enjoy our dinner time. And he came up and asked if he could sit with me over dinner, and I knew just enough to know that I felt small and I felt little, my business experience and so forth, and I had a sense that he was bigger. We get caught up in these things sometimes in life about small and big and so forth, and I knew he was big and I was small, and I just thought, what do I have to offer him? And I'd already talked, I'd already spoken, and he said, can I eat lunch with you? And I thought, well, sure. And so he sat down across from me, and he said something to me, almost the first thing that he said, this is what he said to me. And I was wondering if I had shared anything that was relevant to him. He had a business that was bigger and more complex than, and this is going to be a stretch for me to say this, but I wonder if it might have been bigger and more complex than any business in the room here today. As I visited with him about his business and what all he had going on, I wonder if it was as big as at least anything here today. This is what he said. He said, Greg, you've been able to do something that I've never been able to do. And I would like to learn more about how you did it. And that really set me back on my heels. I thought, what is he saying and what does this mean? And he went on and he said this. He said, I've started a lot of things in life, but he said, I've never yet ended anything. And he was speaking of business. So he has a huge business with many different arms and divisions, and he ended up sharing some details with me, and it's huge and complex, but he said, I've never meaningfully ended anything. I've never pulled back. I've never closed anything that I've ever started. And he said, my family is crying for me to figure out how to end something. And it was reassuring to me, and it's very meaningful, and I walked away feeling like he was a friend and like I could relate to him and he could relate to me, because the principles of financial planning, business planning, whether we're at the beginning or whether we're at the end, they're the same. They're about being intentional and thoughtful about what we should be doing and what we want to do with our business. We know that we're going to spend too much time there in the introduction, but we wanted to give some backdrop. And so there were three seasons of life, and the third one I'm not going to talk anymore about. I'm going to move on, and that is I've been involved with Anabaptist Financial, and we've considered it a blessing to be able to share in a setting like this. Like we said before, it's almost too good to be true to be in a setting like this with like-minded people that want to share and learn together about their life and business and how to properly steward the resources that have been entrusted to us for a little while, whether it's 12 years or whether it's three generations. Begin with just a little lighthearted cartoon that I got from my friend Leonard Metter before he passed away. He was in the organization. You might have met him or heard him speak, but it's just a little funny here, a marketing perspective. Who else should we target? And there's men and there's women. Well, the reason I share that and the reason it has meaning to me is one of the things that I want to share about business, and this relates to that successful and large and complex businessman that I met at that other business seminar, is that business planning is not just about growth. It's not just about doing more, and it's not just about getting bigger. But it's also about defining and clarifying that which we will not do. It's not just about yes. Sometimes it's about defining our no. That's what business planning is. It's about defining our path forward in business and that which we desire and that which we feel like is right for us. And so I think I might just turn ahead a little bit to a thought I was going to share a little bit later on. But in our business, in our family business, as small as we were, and I have to admit, I was watching the books. I was like watching the numbers, and I was liking sales. And there's almost nothing that I wouldn't do for a customer just to make a sale, especially in the beginning. I'd never been in retail before, and I would do about anything. And I learned from my wife, and Dave talked about teenage daughters, and I had teenage daughters, and they've grown up now, but they weren't very excited about doing anything for anybody. And my wife helped me very much, and she helped teach me that if we're going to be successful here, we're going to have to not be all things to all people. And we're going to have to figure out what we do and what we can do well, but we're going to have to figure out what we need to say no to. And so we said no, and it became a part of our literal business plan. And so, like, I offer this as an example, and this is somewhat of a metaphor or a figure of speech, if you will. But for some reason, people would come to us, and I don't know why it is, but they would come to us, and they would ask us if we made pies that were different than the pies we made. So we made 10 pies. And if you want a pie, it better be one of our 10, because those are the 10 we made. We didn't make others. We didn't custom bake. We simply didn't. We figured out what worked with our customers, and that's what we did, and we didn't do one-offs for anybody. Now, we tried to say no very sweetly. But the metaphor is this. Over the years that we were in business, at least every year and maybe two or three times a year, I don't know why it is, but there would be people that would ask us if we would make raisin cream pies for them. And I had a customer one time even brought in a recipe, and of course it was his grandma's recipe, and you know where all that's going. And I tried to say no very sweetly, but no, we don't do raisin cream pies. Now, my instinct was to say, sure, I want to make them happy and I want to make a sale. But due to the good influence of my wife and my daughters, we don't do one-offs. Now, I'm not here to talk about raisin cream pie, but I'm here to say that a business plan is not just about saying yes. It's about figuring out what we're going to say no to, whether it's in the area of growth or products and services or people management or whatever it might be. It's not just about saying yes. It's also about saying no. And so we said no to raisin cream pies. There's another thing that troubled us in the beginning, and I think it's relevant here, and so I'm going to mention it here as well, that we said no to, that we didn't want any part of, and that is we were going to have a deli, and we were going to sell cheese and deli meats and baked goods and so forth, but we didn't want to sell any, and I'll just come right out with it, we didn't want to sell any Amish cheese. Number one, we couldn't figure out what was different about Amish cheese. And number two, we felt kind of funny about marketing our cheese as Amish cheese. Now, we ended up buying cheese from Troyer Cheese Company over there in Holmes County, Ohio, and it was Amish cheese, and some of their marketing literature said Amish cheese and so forth, but we weren't going to market who we are even. We just, for some reason, we had some hesitation about that. It wasn't because of the Amish part of it. It was because we felt funny trying to market who we are. And we had somebody help us from the Kansas Small Business Development Center create a business plan, and I shared this dilemma with him. I said, we know that people see us as Amish, and we're not, really, we're not Amish, but all the time we'd hear people on their smartphones saying, we're in that little Amish store down in Sawyer, Kansas, do you need anything? And so we were identified as the Amish store, and yet we didn't want to sell Amish cheese. In other words, we didn't want to leverage that image to make sales in our community. And he said something very profound to me. I shared that with him. And he said, well, don't leverage it. But he said, don't be afraid. And it made me sad that it took somebody from the state of Kansas, an agency, to tell me this. But he said, don't be afraid to embrace, though, who you are. So he said, don't exploit it. Don't market yourself. Don't sell Amish cheese, but embrace who you are. And so we said no to raisin cream pies. We said no to Amish cheese. We said no to books. We're not interested in selling books because we're about food and household items, but we're not interested in books. We ended up making an exception with cookbooks. We'd have people ask all the time, and they would ask not only if we sold books, but they would want to hawk their books. And that got into the process of editing, and there were some of their books that made me laugh to think that we would ever sell them in our store. But people see a storefront, and they think you'll do anything for them. But remember, business planning is not about saying yes all the time. It's also about defining where we're going to say no. Another thing about our business is we were a small, part-time family business that we considered an extension of our homeschool. And so we were only open 3 days a week, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, leading into the weekend. And it defied all business logic. And I know we could have driven our sales higher if we would have just been open more. And customers would ask us all the time, when are you going to open that fourth day? We tried to say no very sweetly, but we never, ever, ever opened the fourth day. So business planning is about defining what we won't do, but it's also about defining what we are and who we want to be and what we're going to do. And I've already mentioned this before, but we wanted to be a small family business, like a family farm. I wanted to do something that I'd never done before, and that is work alongside my daughters before they left home. And it about brings tears to my eyes to remember how beautiful the experience was, but it wasn't always easy. And we're not going to make any jokes about them. They're close enough, they might hear us. But it wasn't always easy. And Dad was grumpy sometimes, and Dad wasn't easy to understand, and I was dealing with my own challenges and so forth within, and my own vulnerability, even launching out in this midlife career change. And it was a challenge, but it ended, and it didn't just end, but it went very, very sweetly overall. And so that's something we defined in our business plan. That's what we want. We want to recreate the family farm experience for our family before they get away from us. And so we wrote it in our business plan. We began, before we ever opened, with a business plan that took 14 pages. And in 2022, 2 years before we died, we wrote a brand new business plan, and it ran to 30 pages. There aren't any two business plans that are alike. But that was our experience in business planning. And one was all about starting up a business. And the second one was all about, in a sense, winding it down properly. And so we defined, we want a small family farm experience. We want the opportunity to work beside our daughters. And we want to represent a salt and a light witness in the community in which we live. Those are things that we wanted to do. So it wasn't all about no, it was about yes, and it was also about products that we wanted to provide. We wanted to provide baked goods, and we wanted to provide a deli, and we wanted to have a dining room to bring people together around food. That used to be a tagline of ours, bringing your family and our family together around food. And so we wanted to do those things, and we defined them in a business plan. We're going to need to move quickly on. There's several slides I acknowledge I'm going to skip over. And they're there for your reference, but we're going to run out of time. And so we're going to try to go to some of our most meaningful slides to us as we share the story of business planning in the context of our own story with Family Food Store. A business plan is simply a plan for our business committed to paper with varying complexity depending on our circumstances. Now that's a very ambiguous answer or definition, but it's true. Business plans are like fingerprints. There are no two of them alike. And we don't want you to feel like that you have to have a business plan just like ours for it to be a successful one. But I do want to say this. If it's not committed to paper and it involves anyone beyond yourself, it's not really a business plan. A business plan becomes the mechanism or the tool that we use to communicate together about the future of our business. And the business plan, when it's written, is the way that we communicate out to others what we plan to do with our business. And if they're just thoughts in our minds, we really don't have a plan by the definition that we're sharing with you here today. These are not the reasons why we have a business plan. Business plan is about the future, right? It's about determining or at least declaring where we're going with our business in 1 year and three and five. But it's really not about assuring outcomes. And we reference the scripture there, for we walk by faith and not by sight. We don't see what's around the corner. There's a number of things that we never saw in the life of our business. One of them was COVID. It turned our business upside down for a while. And yet our plan carried us right on through the COVID years. So it's not about assuring outcomes. It's not about knowing the future. And it's not really about satisfying other people. I mentioned earlier that the Kansas Small Business Development Center helped us. They had a little seminar, and we went to it, and they taught about how to build a business plan. It didn't take me very long, and I'd had some experience with it, but I was trying to learn everywhere I could, and we went to this seminar at our local library. Didn't take me very long to figure out there's a reason they think we need a business plan, and that is to obtain financing. That's not the primary reason why we want to create a business plan. It's about helping us. Maybe I'll just move on to another slide. I'm going to skip a couple in the process. These are the real reasons why we want to develop or write a business plan: to assess our own business situation. Where are we at? Now, our first business plan was about a startup, so where we were at was basically nowhere. We'd bought a property and we had some dreams. We were just making a start. We were green as grass. We were wet behind the ears. We didn't hardly know what we were doing in that realm, and we could tell funny stories about that, but we better not. Second is to identify our resources. What did we have? What did we have by way of people? What did we have by way of capital? What did we have by way of market access? I said we lived in a zip code that only had 400 people in it, but we had a highway that ran in front of our store. It actually 281 actually runs all the way to Canada in the north, and I'm all turned around. I have no idea if this is north, and all the way to Mexico in the south. And our traffic count right through our little town of Sawyer, Kansas, is about 2,400 people. Well, that's a resource for us. That represented an artery of people coming through that could access our store, and that's what business planning is all about. What is our situation? What are our resources? And how can we envision our business future? How do we envision it? How can we plan our business future? What do we see happening? What does success look like? What will we do in the case of failure? That's all about envisioning our business future. We're going to need to go brief with these, but we did want to share some biblical thoughts on planning, and we're just going to go fairly brief with these, but I want to tell you why I'm including them here today is because we have a tendency, and I have it as well, and if you have it, it's okay. I understand it's part of being human, but we have a tendency as we think about business planning, because it's hard work and we're grappling with an uncertain future, we have a tendency to hold back and say, "Well, I can't plan for that which I don't know. I can't see it. It's up around the corner somewhere." And because I can't, and maybe I don't want to, and I don't even know how to start, I start developing this idea that maybe I shouldn't even. Maybe it's not even right to plan. Is it even proper for a child of God and a child of faith to plan? Is planning the antithesis of faith or not? It's a fair question, and to that I respond with these scriptures, not to answer all those questions, but to help. And one of them, of course, is this James scripture about we submissively seek God's will, and James shares this passage of scripture. And it's ironic. It's almost like he was talking to me and to us. Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow we'll go into such a city, even the city of Sawyer, perhaps, and continue there a year or 12, buy and sell and get gain. And then he asked the obvious, whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. And then he says, for that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we will live and do this or do that. So we don't know what lies on the morrow, and we understand that business planning is an exercise of envisioning a path that we can't see. But we have the humble opinion, and we're presenting it to you today for your consideration, that it is not the antithesis of faith to plan for the future. But the teaching of James here tells us, this is how we read it, that he says it's not wrong to even say that we will do this, but that we ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall do this or do that. Another scripture, and it's hard to go brief with this, but the thought of intentionally planning future outcomes. Luke, in the passage of scripture, Luke 14, where he talks about counting the cost, and he talks about building a tower, and if somebody's going to build a tower, don't they sit down first and count the cost? Don't they, in other words, create a budget? Lest haply after he hath laid the foundation is not able to finish it, people around him began to mock and say, this man began to build, wasn't able to finish. In other words, he didn't plan well. Now the context here, we want to be clear, is not about business, and it's not about towers, and it's not about building. The context is about following Jesus. And Jesus is saying that if you're not willing to give everything that you have, you're not worthy to be his disciple. That's the lesson. But the illustration that he used was one that we can relate to. He talked about planning to build a tower and having enough money to finish so that people don't mock us for our lack of planning. And if we as followers of Jesus should be ready and willing to give everything we have, even to life itself, for the cause of the one that we follow, should we not be willing to give even the capital and the time that has been entrusted to us to steward, to care for properly in the season of life that we have it? The last scripture that I wanted to share, it's just about humbly involving others. And this, I think this is an Anabaptist hallmark belief. And it's something that comes very near and dear to us in other applications in life. But we're going to apply it here today in the context of business. Without counsel, purposes are disappointed, but in the multitude of counselors, they are established. We establish purposes in the multitude of counselors. And we would propose to you that business planning and the process of business planning is a tool of establishing counsel through the multitude of counselors. Now, we went into our store life, and I alluded to this earlier, and my wife and I had never been in business together before. And my daughters and I had never been in business together before, and we didn't even mean to, but we ran into each other time and time and time again, and sometimes it brought tears, and it wasn't always their tears. But business planning became the tool by which we began to communicate about what we're doing together here. And our purposes were established through that multitude of counselors, even of my own family. And I had to learn to be successful that I didn't have all the answers. And I had to work with my family, and you're going to have to apply that in whatever your setting is. But I can promise you this, you don't have all the answers. You don't have all the answers about what your business needs. And I think we heard about it in the introduction of this seminar here today, that we come here to what? To learn. To learn. We come to learn. We come to hear from a multitude of counselors. And I'm just suggesting in your business that a business plan and the process of creating one, not just the document, not just the paper that you can go throw on the conference room floor, or not floor, table, or the banker's table and say, I've got it, I'm done. Here's my business plan. But the process of creating one, the process of creating one represents a discerning of the voices of a multitude of counselors and establishing a purpose for your business. I'm going to look ahead a moment just to see where we might go. I'm wanting to wrap up in good time. There's maybe one other slide I want to go to here because it is so central to business planning. And it is this thought of strategy. We can't talk about business planning without talking about strategy and defining in a sense what strategy is. So strategy defined, the Greek word strategō, that's how it's pronounced, means the general's view of the battlefield. And what that means is that the general wanted to understand in military settings, he wanted to understand where the landscape lay and where the enemy was and where all of his own resources were so that he could plan the best tactics accordingly. And so when we plan our businesses, and we're going to have to go very short with this, it's very, very important that before we get into the busyness of business life and out serving customers and making sandwiches and baking cinnamon rolls and putting new roofs on and building new houses and wiring them and all the things that we do before we get consumed in the doing, that we actually have an understanding of what our strategy is. What's the big picture? What's the 30,000 foot view? That represents our strategy. And so business planning involves strategy. It involves thinking about strategy. Remember I said before we ever opened the door to serve a customer, we had settled it in our hearts that this is about creating a family farm opportunity for us and our children to work together. That was our strategy. There are other aspects of strategy as well. I talked about being a witness and a service in the community in which we live. That was part of our strategy as well. That was all strategy. Then the door opens and it's easy to forget all of that as we go about doing what we do and dealing with problems and challenges and so forth. So it's important that we understand the meaning of this word strategy, the general's view of the battlefield. I would just note, and I looked this up last night, I thought of it, and we hardly have time, but it's so important, I'm going to share it. In the sixth chapter of Ephesians, there's a passage there about spiritual warfare, and it says this, and these would be familiar words, I'm sure, to all of you. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. And the wiles there is drawn from the Greek word methodia. We're pronouncing that right, or method. And it's just saying that Satan, even as he comes against God's people, he has a method. He has a strategy. It's not willy-nilly. He's not just responding in the moment, but he actually has a concerted strategy against the people of God. And we're just saying in the same way we conduct ourselves in business, or we should, strategically. And by that we mean with method, with thought, with observation, with planning, with intention. All the while saying, if the Lord will, we will do this, or we will do that. A trick or a stratagem. I looked up that Greek word methodia last night, and it says a trick or a stratagem, a strategy, a plan for, a plan against somebody or something. Well, we were just wanting to build here in this session, we were wanting to build some thoughts about why do we plan? And is planning really right? Is it good? Is it well supported even with scriptural thought? And we share our humble opinion is that it is, and that it's important. And it's not just about planning our yeses, but it's also about planning our nos and our limits and things that we will not do and the way we will handle the resources that we have been entrusted with. And in the few minutes we have here remaining, I have another story I want to share from our store experience. I was very opposed to debt. I didn't want to go in debt deeply to begin this store enterprise. And again, my situation was very small. In fact, standing here today, it could almost be embarrassingly small. So I think about all the capital resources in the room here today. But it was real because it involved everything that we had. We didn't want to go in debt, and so we were very careful and very cautious about debt and about how we financed the startup of our small business. So we were watching our pennies very closely, and we finally conceded that we were willing to borrow some money to buy the property, but we didn't want to borrow any money to buy equipment or to fill it with inventory and to begin operations. And so we were very sensitive, as you might be from time to time, even if you've got more zeros before the decimal than we did. We were very sensitive to how much money we wrap up in this thing. And we had a brother and a sister, kind of peers of my wife and I from another state, and they came out one weekend and spent the weekend with us. And we were sharing with them like new excited people do, you know, we were starting this new store and we were telling them about it and everything. And Sunday night around the supper table, he told me this. He said, "Greg, we had a business situation. We had a deal of some kind." He might have told me, and I forget the details, but he said, we put out some money in a situation and we gave it up. You know, it was gone in our minds. But something turned around and somehow that money came back to them. And he said, I feel like that money's not, it's not really my money. And he said, I would like to pass it on to you to help start up your business enterprise here. And oh, that gave me some mixed feelings. I felt kind of dumb in a way, you know, how it is. But at the same time, I felt like we had a need, and I thought, here, he's offering some financing, and he acted like, you know, it was a chunk of change. But he said, it's Sunday evening, and he said, I don't want to talk about it anymore, but he said, I just want you to know that we'd like to help support your startup. And so he said, we're going to get up early in the morning, and we'd already planned this, and they wanted a cup of coffee in the morning very early, 3 or 4, to head back east to their home. But he said, before I leave in the morning, I'm going to write a check to you, and I'm going to put it in an envelope, and I'm going to leave it on the dresser. And so I said, okay, I understand that. And my wife and I, we slept through them leaving early, and you know, it left me with kind of a funny feeling, but I did find my way over there into the bedroom. Sure enough, there was an envelope, and I found the envelope, and I opened it up, and again, this might be laughable in the context of your businesses, I don't know, but it was real to me, and the principle's the same. There was a check inside for $10,000. I thought, wow, that'll go a long ways. We ended up stocking our store with about $50,000 worth of inventory before we opened, and that represented 20% of it, and I'll just say this, I found a place to use it. But through the 12 years that we operated our business, I never forgot it. I never forgot it. And I always remembered, even as I would review our financials from time to time, I would remember there's that $10,000 in there that's not really mine. We were making decisions about our capital resources and should we do this and should we put a new porch on the front. But remember that $10,000, that's not really our money. And so we planned very carefully around that $10,000 because we didn't want to use it wrongly because it wasn't really our money. And we would just conclude with this thought as we think about planning for business, planning for your business. What money do you have that is your own? And what money do we possess and work with and touch and handle even as it comes through our hands that is not really our own? God help us to use even a tool like business planning to wisely and intentionally handle the money that is not our own. Thank you.